Hello and welcome. My guest today is Zach Pograb. Zach is an entrepreneur and writer and one of my best friends in the world. And in this conversation, we spoke about why every creator is actually starting a cult, the importance of living in your own world, how to find big ideas, identity change, and why Zach cried during two separate movies. This is the fifth time that Zach has appeared on the podcast, episode 82, 155, 261, 244, and now episode 343. And I always love these check-ins with Zach because it seems like each time we record, he's grown in some way. So if you enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor, share this. Share with somebody you think will enjoy it as well, whether that's through Twitter, Instagram, group chat, text message. If you think there's somebody out there who is interested in creators, obsession, creativity in some way, this could benefit them, then go ahead and share the show because that's how this show grows. And I love to see the posts and the quotes on social media. So continue doing that. I'm excited for you to listen to this episode because I enjoyed recording this one, as always, with Zach. And if you enjoyed it, let me know on Twitter or Instagram in some way. Awesome. Let's get right into the episode with Zach Pograb. Zach Pograb, why do you want to start a cult?
Every great creator is building a cult in plain sight. And when you start to like see behind the curtain, it is just so obvious. And the best are doing it without you even realizing it. And so I don't know when it hit me that this is, when I say cult, it's not actually a cult for, you know, legal reasons, but it definitely is a cult. And I just became obsessed with this idea of building, you know, a really strong community once I saw that I had one, honestly.
The Black Flag.
The Black Flag. Yeah.
What's that?
Well, I mean, at the core, it's one word, obsession. And I started talking about that probably 2 years ago and slowly became more obsessed with obsession. As I saw it resonate with people and as I saw that community and that, you know, cult being built, the Black Flag happened out of nowhere, really. I just was on a run and, you know, a lot of good ideas come from running. And something hit me that we needed an emoji. You needed something for the obsessed. That's like, so that's another example of cult building. I didn't even come up with that. Someone called themselves, like someone in the community, just one of my followers, called themselves that. And I was like, wow, that sounds pretty good. And so I put it up to a vote, put like all the options for, I think it was like a black flag, a pirate flag, a rabbit, like following the white rabbit. And then, I don't know, for me, I kind of already knew which it was. It was going to be the plain black flag, but that's what people voted for. And then, people really resonated with it.
What elements make for a cult that is worth following?
So, at its core, every cult is like a lighthouse, right? It is showing people a new direction, showing the light towards somewhere new. And at its core, I think what the best cults do is they make people feel normal for feeling different. It's like I tweeted that. And I think it's so true. They make people feel normal for feeling different. And so the reality is that every single human on earth wants to feel different, I think. Everyone feels like they're different. And so people get obsessed with things and they need somewhere to call home. And so people think a cult, when they think of that, they think of, oh my God, all these people are the same. Why would people, you know, come together like that? But the paradox there is that people actually join cults, join communities to become more different. They join to become more themselves and to create a character of themselves. And I've just been, since I started, like this started clicking with me, I've just been, you know, obsessed with trying to make my own and make this happen because it's the coolest thing ever.
And it's a relatively recent phenomenon, right? Of you trying to build this into something that's a cult. And I think that
it's something I see a lot with a lot of different creators as well, where they're trying to take their following and make it more than just a following. The example that comes to mind is the podcast I actually published this morning or yesterday with Leon Hendricks, and how at first he was trying to chase viral videos. And then he's like, no, I want to create a community of people called Driven, where these people are also interested in becoming all they can be. And so it's a theme I start noticing more and more, where it's like, when anyone can get attention, what you actually want is affinity towards something. And so you've studied people like Alex Cooper, Ralph Lauren. Who else comes to mind for people who have done this successfully in the past?
There's so many. And the best examples are the ones, you know, you don't think of, right? So like Apple and Nike. When you think of these brands now, you don't really think of them as cults. Everyone wears Nike. Everyone wears Apple. But they started as cults. They started as extremely irreverent. No one ran, you know, when Nike became a thing in the beginning. Running was like a weird thing that crazy people did. And, you know, that might have, I think that was like a huge thing when they started. Apple, you know, their whole thing, think different. That famous Steve Jobs speech, I'm being a misfit, you know, fitting a round peg, fitting in a square hole. That was the core of their brand. It still is, but it's like these things start super niche, super cultish, and then go to the mainstream. That's why there's always new room for cults, new cults, because what's new is always going to be old eventually, unless you have a rare innovator. But there's always new opportunities. There's someone's always looking for a new leader to follow. That's like why I wrote this the other day. No one wants more podcast clips like this. No one wants more workout clips. Everyone is tired of the same stuff. People just want new paths to follow. People want new people to follow. And you know, the people building the best communities, the best cults are giving that. Alex Cooper is a great example where she had, you know, pure lightning in a bottle and still, and has ridden it so well. But, you know, she had done 3 episodes with Barstool, right? After Barstool, she became a part of Barstool and was the number two podcast in the world behind Joe Rogan. That is ridiculous. But why was that? It was because her cult, her lighthouse, was built on an idea that the world was begging for. It was begging for it. These girls like wanted to talk about sex. They wanted to be open with it. It was so taboo at the time. And she just found this perfect thing. And that's the hardest part. The cult, people think what it is it starts with connection. It starts with one true, real connection, person to person, right? And yeah, if you like, obsession is very similar, right? It's taboo. It's kind of like it divides people. Don't be obsessed. It's too much. You need work-life balance. It's the same thing, just a different, you know, color.
How do you deal with people in your own life who don't understand the cult that you're trying to create?
Like family? Yeah.
People who don't understand.
I mean, they're pretty supportive of my family now. They kind of get it. But I feel like there's just not many people in my life anymore that don't understand it. Sorry, that's a bad answer. But it's I don't expect them to. It's like very few people are doing what we're doing. And there's a lot of them, but not, there's so many people that aren't. And so, yeah, I don't expect them to. I'm just in my own world all the time, especially lately, like a little too much lately, where I'm like, I'll be out to dinner, I'll be doing things, and I'm working on something in my head in the background. And I feel like everyone who's like obsessed, everyone who's like a creative has felt that, and like living in their own world all the time. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're getting too dark with the cult stuff, though. Like, it's not like I'm actually trying to build a cult, but I also am.
What was your first obsession?
It was definitely video games. I was so obsessed with Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2. I would go to school and sit in fifth grade, and I would take flashcards, and I would write out like loadouts and like Call of Duty like loadouts I wanted to use for, you know, the game. I was like doing that all day. That was obsession. And I'd play it all day, you know. That was probably one of my first obsessions. There was one summer, I might have told you this story on another podcast, but I was like sixth grade and I was reading these books about like some writer was writing about like, I don't know, like inner city crime or something. And I just became obsessed with this author. And I'd never really read before, but I took all summer, I read like 15 of his books. And that was weird. That was like, when I think back, it's like, that was like a moment of obsession. Yeah. Those are the two I think of.
Yeah. there are people who are in part of the obsessed who are probably looking at this podcast and previous ones we've recorded as signs that they're not crazy. Have you ever felt like you were crazy for feeling obsessed? And if so, what would you tell people who are in that position right now, who look at people in their own world who don't get it, and they're looking to podcasts and resources like this as a way to understand themselves better?
The one thing I always said to myself was live in your own world all the time. It kind of relates to what I said before about being at dinner and having a conversation with yourself at the same time. It's like you have to brainwash yourself to think that these extreme things are possible. And like we might play one, but when I was younger in college, and this was like that core moment where, like, you know, I was a pre-med student. I had no clue what I really wanted to do, even though I knew I wanted to do something epic and big. I would like go in the car when I was driving. I would record voice notes to myself, ranting to myself like a psychopath. And like whatever I had to do to keep that like voice in my head alive. We've talked about the voice before, because like that voice, that like slightly insane voice is very rare. And if you have it, the hardest part when you're young is keeping it, because most people let it die. And then they never have the voice again. And then they get old and die, and that's fine. But they miss out on what could have happened if they listened to that voice. Yeah, you have to just fill your brain with the right things and embrace being on that path alone. Because I've been working on this thing. I posted the other day. It's like the path of obsession, right? And there's three acts and there's seven parts. And the third part, I think it's the third part. The most important. It's called the dark place. I think it's third. And that is that time when you've kind of figured out what you wanted to do. Like, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to write. I knew I wanted to create. But I was all alone in a, you know, state university. No one understood what I was doing. I was just like, I was an EMT at the time. In between calls, I would write out posts to post on Instagram. When I was going to 911 calls, I'd be writing stuff that had nothing to do with that. It was like content stuff. Don't tell my paramedics.
We won't tell
that.
Anyone.
They're definitely
this,
watching this.
This stays between us.
But I was just like, I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't go out. I was just working. That was when I had my event company too. When I started it, I was just all alone. And that it was the dark place. That is like years where no one's going to understand what you're doing. You're not going to have a lot of friends. Like I didn't have a friend like you. I didn't have friends like we have now. It's dark, but you have to get through it.
Okay, I want to get to the friends piece, but first I want to hear some of the voice notes or one voice note that you left, because I think a lot of people can relate to this, and the fact that you have these documented and we've talked about them in the past.
Yeah.
Let's get one of them out.
All right, see if we see how this works.
And this is a practice I recommend for people where it's like literally take a video, take a voice note and try to do it once a month or once a week. And it gives you a place of, this is where I'm at. And this is the how I actually spoke. You speak differently today than this voice note.
It's pretty bad. It sounds like I'm like high or like a mumble rapper or something. But but the other side of it is you can't force it. You want to record this when you're like truly in the moment after a great workout or a run or something. We just have this energy and you have to share these ideas. That was when I would record these, when I would be like in the car driving to something I didn't want to do, but I just had this stuff like bursting in me. And this one, I recorded it. I kind of explained the scene here a little bit, but I was like, I just left the test and I was like sitting in the bleachers at my school.
What's the date on this?
11/28/2017. A long time ago now.
November 28th, 2017.
Play a little bit of it.
Yeah, as I left the gym and walked slowly, listening to, what was I listening to? Love and Hennessy? Yeah.
And I Love and Hennessy.
Just looking out onto the city of Vestal, listening to the cars crossing across the parkway and the lights of the UHS across the street. Blackness of the field ahead of me made me think of just everything that lies ahead. Nothing's written. Everything out there is just for me to form right now. And the decisions and what I do now will undoubtedly form every single thing I do in my life. This is the start of it, leaving college. The start getting off the scripted path. And it's a big moment. And I think I'd be dumb to not acknowledge the fact that I don't love being in school. I like feeling smart, but I don't love studying. I actually hate it, and I try to avoid it. I think entrepreneurship is in my heart. I think that work ethic and giving up the stuff and being patient, it's in my heart. I know it's going to take a while. I know it's going to take a lot of work. But I know I can learn anything if I try hard enough. Fuck, I learned organic chemistry 2 years ago. I was at a 2.6 GPA. You know? Fuck, like, if you had told me 3 years ago, or three or four years ago, I was fucking bench pressing probably 30 pounds in the school gym, that'd be benching 205 for 6'5". I'd not have fucking believed you.
I was really skinny.
Anyway, let me get to the point. You need to combine what you love, and what you love right now is fitness, self-improvement, class motivation, / behavioral modifications, and neuroscience. Combine those three things which are intrinsically motivated, intrinsically linked. You're going to have, here's what you're going to do. You're going to have the faster brand be your quest and be your wine library, okay? And on top of that, you're going to build a brand about yourself, a fitness channel focused not only on fitness, but also neuroscience, and including specific neuroscience-related articles, kind of like Jeff Nippert and kind of like Vitruvian Physique, because no one else is doing that shit. And if you can do that, find the studies, find the good editing, and make specific videos about what people can do to enhance their neurotransmitters and different things, and show actual things, just like Jeff Nippert, I think you can be something really special. On top of all that, form behavior hack, either as that video resource, I think you should just include it within your fitness channel. And then with that, you're going to have your apparel brand, which I want to be just different. I want it to combine ASOS and H&M with Athlete and the Gymshark range. And I want it to be this own new category of gym wear that is really hard to describe, but I want to create it. And I don't care if I have to custom manufacture it. I don't fucking care. But I want to fucking do it, and I want to do it right. And I don't know. I just think it could be really cool.
What inspired you to...
Yeah, I didn't even do that. But some of that stuff I did do. So it's interesting.
And maybe some of the stuff that you're going to do in the future that you can't possibly know yet. I mean, it's so fascinating, man. Like,
but a lot of that is still like... Yeah, it's weird to listen to that. Some of that stuff I didn't do, but some of it I kind of did. And I mean, it's cool to hear myself say like behavior hack. Like that was like 2 years before I ever did anything though, which like hurts me because like, ugh. Wish I started it earlier.
But, 2 years.
Yeah. Started like 2 years after that and never really started a clothing brand. I've always done clothing stuff, but interesting.
Why do you think it took you 2 years to actually do? Because a lot of people are sitting on something right now that they know they should do. They've written down in their journal. They have a voice note. They've put it out, but they haven't actually done the thing that they know they should do in their heart that they will do sometime in the future. And also, what is that thing for you right now?
Yeah, it's tough. I think there's two sides to it, which is like, you could have started it or you just weren't ready mentally. And I think that was the time when I recorded that, I was definitely in that dark place, right? And I don't really have an answer. I was still wanting to be a soccer player at that time. I was still following that obsession. And if I wouldn't even call it an obsession. I was still following that like passion, that track I was on. It wasn't until I lost everything where I left. I had transferred to another school to play soccer and then finally left there and then went home till I finally then started my business, which was after that. So that's why I think I was still like trying to be a soccer player. And it wasn't until like I lost that completely where I had the bad injury and left my team and went home where I really started everything.
Mm. And when you look back on it, it's been what, 4 years since starting Behavior Hack?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
4 years, 1 million followers. What's that like?
Yeah, I don't like celebrating the followers at all, especially because I've gotten so many of them so recently. Mm. So it's like those people barely know me. They know me by like 5 pieces of content. So like, not 5, but you know, a handful. That's why like everyone wants to celebrate that, but it's like the last thing I want to celebrate. But it is cool. It's cool to see it really compound. over time, where, you know, I only had like 200,000 in the fall. It's cool for the people who have been following for like years. It's pretty special, you know? Yeah, I don't know. It does feel like I, what's more exciting to me is like the obsession, like that word. That is all I care about, like that word. And watching that effort compound over time, where I first like kind of really committed to it, like soft committed, probably 2 years ago, like I said. And then over time, it's just become like my, I guess, niche, you could call it. And what's cool is seeing that compound over time, where like people I admire know me for it.
So October 25th, 2022, would you say that date marks the start of a different life for yourself? What is that date? What happened?
You could say that. You could say that. That was a very special date where Danny Miranda brought a group of friendly savages together.
Friendly savages. Yeah. Friendly obsessed savages.
Friendly obsessed savages. Me and Hunter Weiss, Dylan Jardin, and Danny all got some great tacos together in the West Village. And I don't know what happened to that lunch, but really great things happened after that. And it set me and set all of us, I think, on a new path where we just all leveled up.
From my perspective, what happened was I looked at three people who separately were crushing their worlds and who didn't know each other. And I saw that there was a potential for, if you did know each other, great things could happen.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what would happen to each of you guys separately and together in the following 6 months. But it's been an absolute joy to watch and witness Hunter's business take off to another level, yours, Dylan just continuing to crush life. Like it is a remarkable thing when you witness and see three people become friends who are all on that same path.
Yeah. I mean, what happened is, you know, I met Dylan and Hunter. Hunter, for me, I'll just tell them what happened. Me and them, Hunter brought out like this true savage, obsessed side of me, you know, that pure, like relentless energy to just build and create and live in your own world. He is like the perfect example of that. And then Dylan, obviously Dylan like showed us about the animation stuff, inspired me and Hunter to do that. And that just like, you know, brought my message, same writing, same message to, you know, tens of millions of more people, which is amazing to think about, you know?
How many people have you reached in the last 6 months?
I don't know that number. A lot though.
Tens of millions of people?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hundreds of millions of people?
Yeah, something like that. It's a lot.
Dude.
It's a lot.
How many people in human history can say that they've reached?
I think it's a billion views in the last few months. I'm going to call that across Instagram and TikTok.
Oh, yeah. A billion views.
Even if it's not, I'm just going to say it is.
How many people do you think have had messages that they've consciously chosen that have reached a billion people ever in human history? Do you realize like how insane people, that is?
Yeah, it's insane. It's not a billion people, but it's insane. It is cool to think about. It's cool because so many friends texted me that their like girlfriends were just scrolling their feed and they heard my voice, which is so funny. Feel bad if people were trying to like sleep. And they're like, oh, Zach, interrupting some private time.
A billion views. Oh my God.
It's cool because that doing those animations is my first experience of putting like a small ripple through the world, you know, small ripple, but a lot of people saw those. And a lot of people started doing animations and stuff because of me. And that is cool.
And you're not content with what is currently.
Of course not.
You're like, all right, that was great. That was a nice wave.
This is the Mickey Mouse sketch. This is like him on the train going home from, I mean, he got screwed, Disney, Walt Disney, with his first cartoon where this company stole it from him. You know that?
No, what happened with Walt Disney?
I'm going to mess up the name. But his first cartoon was great. And he was going to New York to sell it to this company. You know, they were going to promote it and publish it. And they looked at Disney and they looked at his animators and they said, why do we need you, Disney? We have, you know, you're not the one making this. Your animators are. Mm-hmm. We're just going to take your animators and take your IP. So they took it. It was started with an O. I think it was called Otto or Otis. I forgot it. But, and then he's like, shit, I'm screwed. I lost my, you know, IP. I lost my thing. And then on the way home, he sketched out, he was going home from New York to LA on a train, and he sketched out Mickey Mouse. And so, yeah, maybe I'm a little past the sketch, but I'm like definitely in that V1, what I've been doing so far. That's the way I look at it.
Just to start.
Yeah.
What was the, Otto was, what did he have originally? What was the cartoon that, was it Mickey Mouse or different?
Different.
Got you.
Different. And who knows what his career would have been if he went with that, or if he never found Mickey Mouse, you know?
Yeah.
That's the beautiful part about losing things. That's why I'm so grateful that like soccer didn't work out, because that story of going to the dark place after soccer probably wouldn't have happened if I kept playing soccer and had like, let's say, an average or good college soccer career. Mm. I don't think it would have happened. I genuinely don't, but it did. And Walt Disney lost his first cartoon, and look what happened to him, you know?
Where does this ambition to start something as big as Walt Disney or Alex Cooper, this empire, where does your ambition for an empire stem from?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that lately. We talked about that a little bit, which is probably some unique combination of a lot of failures as a kid. Not having a lot of confidence. I grew up with confidence, but through just like events and through like the ones I can think of are just like soccer. I would get really anxious about soccer, and that hurt my confidence. I had really bad acne as a kid. That hurt my confidence. So I went from this kid that was in middle school, a little more outgoing, to a very reserved person in like high school, very shy. And I think, yeah, that lack of confidence, everything stems from there. You know, I still struggle with that. And I feel like I have to achieve these insane things to kill that part of me, you know, and have that confidence.
What if you achieve the greatest highest of highs and don't find what you're looking for on the other side?
Probably won't. But I don't know. I decided this year, though, that I was only going to be honest and only do things I wanted to do, which has led to issues.
But like what?
In my personal relationships and life and mental health, I guess. But I just realized that I get the most joy from the game of just building and creating. Mm. That is where I get the most joy. I really don't enjoy much else. I enjoy very little else right now.
Where did the decision to be honest about everything stem from?
Maybe lack of progress. And maybe just felt like that was holding me back, being someone I wasn't.
Lying.
Yeah. It is kind of lying. You know, when you do things you don't want to do, you act like you're having a good time. Everyone experiences that, but you don't have to. You don't have to do that.
And what has helped you be more honest?
Not thinking about things. Like not letting myself think about stuff. Just like going off the first reaction, the first thought. That's when I'm like, with the animations, that's what happened. I didn't think about it. It just happened. When I learned that it was a thing, and when I learned I could do it, and I figured out how to do it, I just did it. And it's the same concept. It's like removing that filter. That filter is what causes so much stress, I think, for me and for a lot of other people.
The filter being, what will other people think about this? Should I do it? Yeah. Should I not?
Yeah.
What? And getting in your head about it.
That filter is messy. It's disgusting. It's gross. Like, get rid of that filter, and things can be a lot clearer, I think.
I think there's something almost spiritual when you are acting without that filter. When you're acting truly in alignment with what you feel, regardless of what people will say, like that's where the best music comes from. That's where the best art comes from. That's where the best business comes from. You have this idea as well where it's like, and I think it's related to this, where you should act on things and you should post things as soon as it hits you. Is that related?
100% it's related, yeah.
Where does 100%. That idea come from?
I just hate, like, especially on Twitter, these, I mean, obviously everyone's tired of like the threads, the typical, you know, typical tweet boy, thread boy threads. But even beyond that, the whole like content system, founder system, like content OS, I've seen 100 people sell that. And most of them are stealing my content. Like literally, like most of them are ripping my videos word for word. Like that's what you're buying. And just this whole like automation, automating content. All this stuff. I don't like it. Especially, I think you can do that stuff when you have, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of followers, and you're building a real business and you're trying to scale. That's different. And it depends on your goals. But if you're trying to be, you know, more of an artist, if you're trying to be known for your ideas, you have to remove the filter. That's when they're most real. You have to share them immediately. Even if the idea is recorded immediately and in drafts and shared later, I think you've done that sometimes and I hate it. I'm like, just share it right now because it's different. It's different when you, it's very hard to explain, but all the tiny interactions that happen when you share that idea with the world, you can't predict. Mm. And I think it's best to get that out when it's the most pure and it's the most real, which is right when you have it.
Mm. So how do you reconcile then some of the greatest books that have been written? Obviously, to write a book, it takes a lot of revisions. It takes a lot of you sitting with thoughts. It takes the writing happens, then you think about it, then you publish it maybe 2 years after you think about it. How does music, similar, could be similar?
It's a good point. But I think so much of a book is hitting in a longer timeline. So much of a book is hitting at the right time. For our work, we came out at the perfect time and it became people's Bible, you know? And I look at it, yeah, it's a good counterpoint, but I'd say it's like a refinement. Book is a refinement of those types of ideas. Mm. Yeah.
What's going to be your Bible?
I don't know it yet. I have the framework in my mind and I've shared it, which is like the path of obsession, where I look at all these icons, all the greats who I aspire to be, like they've all followed this path. And it's going to be some version of that, but it's going to have a great name. And it's going to be something people can live by and go back to and learn from. It's going to have frameworks. It's going to have, every cult like has a Bible, you know? If you look at like Call Her Daddy, that podcast is their Bible, you know? They listen to it every week. That's Alex Cooper. She's like their sermon, what's it called?
Preacher,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jewish, didn't go to church.
What was Walt Disney's?
His Bible?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know. Might have been one thing that's similar is when he started Disneyland, the way he started it was he did a show for, I think it was PBS, might have been, where it was a show and it was about building Disneyland. And it was like a behind the scenes of the whole empire. I think in a lot of ways that was like a Bible, gave people like, maybe not a Bible, but it was something that drew people into his world. And then, you know, Disneyland, sorry, was insane. They had like so many more people than they expected.
Hmm.
And yeah, I don't know, I'll have to think about that one.
When you think about creating a Bible or creating a resource for people to latch onto who agree with the message, what should a creator be thinking about in order to create a Bible effectively or create a resource effectively that the people following the message can latch onto and understand?
You want it to be, I love this quote by, this is a quote by Virgil Abloh, and he described his art, and I'm going to misphrase some of it, but he said, you want to make art for tourists and purists, I believe, where someone who's just walking by can like appreciate it like a tourist, but a purist can go like 100 levels deeper and appreciate that. And I think that's a good way to approach it, where you want stories and frameworks that can grab the attention of the average person, right? Most people can relate to something in 4-hour work week, right? But not everyone is going to go, you know, deep and hire offshore employees and do all this and build an automated cash flow system, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's like a good way to look at it. It all starts with a difference though. Like I said earlier about the cult building, right? It all starts with like something that is different and gives people a new path. And finding that point of difference is so hard. It is so hard. And Alex Cooper found the best one possible, because it's really hard, I think, because you cannot, it's one of those things that has to come to you. It's very hard to force, so hard.
Well, it took you a couple of years, right?
To
figure out obsession.
Just from posting every day. And finally I found something that resonated. It resonated, it was unique, and I love talking about it, and it was controversial. Like those factors made it special.
I want to talk to you about how your identity has changed from being a photo booth owner to now being a creator, or you say you're in content. Like when people ask you what you do, it's been interesting for me being your friend, noticing the shift of how you have answered the question over the past year, literally just only the past year. So it's like, what has that been like from your perspective, where maybe in April of 2022, you would have said, I'm a photo booth owner. And today you say, I do content.
Yeah, now I don't talk about it anymore.
You don't talk about photo booth.
It's the same thing I did when I was younger with those voice notes. You have to brainwash yourself to get out of your current reality, I think. And
it's a great line.
You have to constantly be questioning what people say to you. You have to realize that your friends, your family, these really close people, especially your family, someone said this and it's so true. They care more about your safety than your growth. And that is just the fact. They don't care about your massive visions. They support them, but they would optimize for your safety more than anything. And realizing that has helped. Constantly pushing yourself to think bigger. That is what's hard. And also, like, what's hard is the photo booth is still, at its core, a great business. But at this whole time, it's just been to feed this bigger thing, this bigger mission, right? With content. It's what it's been the entire time. It's what it's always been. And it gave me a lot of time to become the person I was. That business, yes, it took a lot of time, especially in the beginning, but it gave me a lot of time back also. And now it's, you know, gave me freedom, really, for like the last year, at some level of freedom to really, you know, obsess over my content and everything I was doing. And it's kind of like, the way I look at it now, I said this the other day, it's like, imagine this table in front of us and there's a penny and a $100 bill. If you're like, if you just see the penny, you might take out the penny if you're Jewish like me. But if there's both of them, if there's a penny and $100, you're just going to take the $100 and probably leave the penny, right? That's kind of how I look at my photo booth now. Mm-hmm. Even though for some, it's like, dude, this is a huge business. This could be so big. You have to keep doing this. It's insane. It's like, no, this is like a pebble compared to a mountain. And the problem is the mountain is mostly invisible. It's foggy. I'm still, even though I've made progress, I'm still just getting the base camp set up the way I look at it. And yeah, I don't know. These fun analogies are just a way of saying like, this is so much bigger. This is who I am. And it got to the point now where this was real. And now it's the only thing I want to identify with. Because that identity, identifying with the past keeps you there, I think. And so I think that's helped me.
It's funny though, because at one point you were thinking, I'm going to build the biggest photo booth company in the world. When did that switch happen where you're like, all right, no, the actual opportunity is with content, is with obsession, is with my writing, is with putting things out on social media?
Truthfully, it happened when I really started making progress, like last fall, when I really hit that like exponential kind of growth. But yeah, before that, it was more of a thought I had to do that. But now it's like, I would never do that. It's totally different worlds.
When you look at that exponential growth and you look at the amount of opportunities you then have to filter and decide and figure out who to align with, what brands that you should support, what people you should connect with, because the amount of opportunities that come when someone goes from 200,000 followers to 1 million followers is like probably an incredible amount of new stuff. And that's positive in one sense, but it also could be negative if you can't filter it correctly. How do you think about filtering the opportunities, brands, people to work with?
Still learning. So like, I don't think I have the best answer here, but I think it has to be a hell yes, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the stuff I have done has been that, right? The best is when you can truly make a great piece of content while promoting someone else and everyone wins. It's a win, win, win. The worst is you promote someone and you bother the audience, right? You make something that's purely selfish. So I don't know. I really want to work with people when I do work with people, I want it to completely align, everyone to be excited and to focus on making something great for, you know, my following and theirs.
And then how do you think about creating products yourself versus selling other people's products?
So when my following really started to grow, it was like, these amazing companies reached out to me that I've loved and I've seen and I've used, and it's exciting and it's great to work with them. And that is really cool. But I think long term, it's all about having your own stuff. And that doesn't mean you can't work with other people on the way up that you love and companies you want to support. I think that's great, especially if you can collaborate with them and make, you know, really good pieces of art. But you have to build your world. You have to build your empire. And that happens one product at a time under your own name. You know, like, I love this quote. It's like, what is brand? It's just the cumulative perception of products over time. And that's what it is. And so you need things people can use. And depends what you want to do. But if you really want to build like a world for people to enter, I think things have to be under your own name. And I think also, I mean, you've talked to me about this. When you can make things that are purely you and purely art, it is just natural to want to like promote it and sell them. Really enjoy, and it's a really a natural extension of you. So I'm excited to do a lot more of that stuff.
You haven't, you've sold very few products yourself in your 4-year tenure on social media.
Yeah.
What do you think is holding you back?
I like to give. I like to give. And I think I'm in the camp that I don't want to sell anything unless I'm truly, truly obsessed with like the product. Yeah. Because I have in the past. I sold some merch once. And I knew it was not fully like there. And I just felt so disgusting after, you know? And it was fine. Like whoever bought it. I didn't like steal anyone's money. They got their product. It was fine. It wasn't a lot of people who bought, so it's okay. But it's like, I felt disgusting after that and realized that I would never sell anything that I didn't want to sell again.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
That's such a visceral
it's true.
Word to use.
Yeah. And so that experience maybe held me back a little bit. I don't know. I really do believe in like the Hormozy thing. Like, if you build an audience big enough, you won't have to ask. And so like now that's how I want to do things. I only want to make the most amazing things that, you know, I haven't really made those things, but I want to make them. I want to show people they exist and leave it there. And I think that's a good way to do things.
Okay. Gun to your head. You need to make, let's say, $1 million in 6 months. What do you do this while also not ruining your reputation? Because let's assume that you have to make the $1 million by 6 months, but you are going to live for another 60 years.
In 6 months?
Six months.
That's all I have?
Yeah.
I would probably do a combination of services, high ticket services and communities around animation stuff and like community stuff. Super exclusive.
Super exclusive.
Probably.
Community.
Yeah. Probably have different types, different like tiers, but yeah.
Why is that the first thing that comes to mind?
I don't know. $1 million is a lot. And I would probably just do services. I would do high ticket services.
High ticket services.
Yeah. But I don't want to do that. So it's like,
how do you figure out what to sell when you've done writing, you've built a community of obsessed people, and do you even want to make money off the audience that you've built, or do you want to do something entirely different? Like, how do you think about all this?
The way I think about it is I only want to build things that are a natural extension of me and that people are kind of begging for. Like people want to pay me without a website, you know? Things like that, where the product is so good and I'm so obsessed with it that I would post it 100 times on my feed, you know, stuff like that. And so that's kind of how I think about it now. Yeah. Like if we talked about this, like if the product itself is art, then you'll have no problem promoting it. And so I only want to do things like that.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. When you think about the people that you are looking at right now and saying those people are doing it right, or those people are doing it the best, who comes to mind for you right now?
There's so many. Christian Guzman has always been like the one I think is doing it the best. Like if you look at his world now that he's built step by step, there are so many brands and sub brands in there. And he's created like a world for people who love fitness and bodybuilding to enter, you know, Alphalete. He has the Alphaland gym, the Alphalete gyms that he's going to open around the world. He has his energy drink. He has bodybuilding competition. There's so many different things and they're all connected. They all fit his brand. And it's like the best people who are doing this is this is Ralph Lauren quote. I was reading about him the other day, and or I was listening to a Founders podcast. Shout out David Senra. And he said how the reason Ralph Lauren brand did so well when he was younger, because he was marketing a lifestyle, because he was creating everything around his life and what he did. He wore certain clothes to work, certain clothes to relax, certain clothes to vacation. And people wanted to dress like him and be like him. And when you look around at the people who are building the iconic brands and the iconic media properties, they're all doing this. The people that I'm really inspired by are the things you don't think of, though. It's, I mean, obviously Disney, obviously Disney's the number one example of building this massive network of, you know, IP and brand and product that all connects. But even stuff like Playboy, I've been obsessed with Playboy lately. Think about how iconic a brand that was. And that touched so many different areas. And it just started with this amazing idea of, you know, this magazine. I think it's subtitled Entertainment for Men. Like, it's just like, didn't exist like that. Playboy, perfect name. White Rabbit or The Rabbit, perfect logo. And it just takes over the world. And then you have Playboy Mansion, you have Playboy, all this stuff. Magnolia, do you know what that is? They were talking about it today on My First Million. And I was already thinking about it recently. And it's just like these guys, these Chip Gaines and his wife started this home improvement show and built out this whole network of media and products. And now they have like a whole town in Waco, Texas. And Magnolia now is like a billion dollar company. And these types of things are what I'm interested in. And I think I have an opportunity to build it around obsession. It just has to be right. All the pieces have to be right and perfect.
What makes for a perfect way to create that? An obsession brand. You've talked to me in the past about a bunch of different ideas, which I won't expose now. But it's like, when do you know it's perfect? When do you know it's ready?
It's when it's obvious. I think that's why I care so much about naming things and naming. And I think when you know, you know. And if you rush it before then, you are sure you can always pivot and adapt, but I don't know. When the idea comes and you know it, I don't know.
How would you rate The Voice right now for you on a scale from 0 to 10? In the last episode we talked about, or two episodes ago, we did episode 244. We spoke about, and this might be episode 344. We'll have to see.
It's pretty, that'd be cool.
But in the last time we were here, you spoke, and we spoke about how The Voice, the thing that you feel in your heart, is when you're doing the thing, you either feel it strongly, you feel it lightly, and it is an embodiment for your own passion. How would you rank The Voice right now for you on a scale from 0 to 10?
Are we ranking it in terms of what I felt in the past or what I would feel over my lifetime? Because they're different.
I would say right now.
Yeah.
In this current moment. Yeah.
Okay. So I'd say back then, our last podcast in October, I'd say probably like 4 maybe or 5.
We did the podcast on July 13th, I believe.
Oh, that's the one. We did one in October though too, remember?
Yes.
But you're talking that one?
Yeah.
July was a lot lower. I don't even remember what we talked about, but it was probably, I don't know, 3 or 4.
3 or 4.
In October, maybe 5 or 6. And now I would say like a 7 or 8, really high now. But I think in the grand scheme of life, I am at like a 1. Like, I think there are levels to The Voice that I'm going to unlock as I do more, where I can't even process that yet because I haven't achieved the things to get to that voice. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What are the achievements?
It's kind of like if you look at like a car, like a Tesla, it is getting updates, right, to its operating system. Mm-hmm. I cannot unlock those operating systems for my brain until I do the things to get there. And I just think the confidence I will have and the way I will think be so extremely different than what I think now, my tiny like thousands of micro thoughts a day, that what I've experienced now, even though it's so high compared to the past, so little compared to the future.
What are the things you are going to need to unlock to make that a reality?
I have these big ideas of the empire, the world that I want to build. And it's just about making them happen, like step by step.
Like what?
Like the flag. Like that idea for the black flag, I'm telling you, give me like 10, 20 years, that will be an iconic image and everyone will associate that black flag emoji. Who knows if the emoji will be around, but just a black flag with my stuff and obsession. And that idea I could not think of. It just happened when I was running. That's what I mean where like, can't force these things. Can't. I've learned that you can't. You can't sit down and figure out how you're going to change the world. You have to go out into the world, do stuff, change things, and just wait for the ideas to come to you. Wait for me to go to a dinner, like a lunch like I went to in the fall with you. I have to go out there and go to the idea. The idea won't come to you. I think I fully believe that.
You have to go out and find the idea? But it sounds like the idea came to you.
Because I went out and got it. I went out and was running. That's what I mean. So what I mean is like you have to go and do things and create and live a creative life. And yeah, that's what I mean when I say you go to the idea through action. But the idea does come to you. Yeah.
What are some of the conditions you can create to help yourself find the ideas that you need to change the world?
Yeah. So you could call it routine, but it's about scheduling activities and doing the activities that create these ideas. Like when I look at my fitness right now and my working out, this is like maybe bad, but like I'm doing it to get ideas. That's how I feel sometimes.
Why is that bad?
It's not bad, but it's just like I'm doing it to figure things out. And a lot of people say like they do it for mental health. They work out for mental health, but it's more than that for me. I'm doing it because I want to figure out the big ideas. That is literally how I think of it when I train and run.
Okay, so do you go into a run and you say, okay, I'm trying to figure something out, or do you leave yourself open? Like, how does that look for you?
I see it as like a emptying and filling of a cup. Like you are constantly filling your cup with ideas and information and inputs, the most weirdest, most unique inspiration, the oldest books, the weirdest podcasts, the weirdest movies. And then you empty it and you do nothing and you run and you walk and you just wait for things, wait for yourself to notice things and think of things. And it's that process. Yeah. I'm kind of working on this on like this challenge I'm starting, which I don't want to talk too much about, but it's like, how do you add these elements to your day that can create through like strict adding them that create these like loose ideas, these random ideas to come to you. It's important, but it's hard.
Wouldn't you say that part of your skill is in the filtering of the ideas and your ability to notice what's a good idea and what's not? And if you do agree with that assessment, what can people do to increase their filters for good ideas?
Yeah, I don't even know if my best thing is the filter. I think it's more of like the noticing. I feel like I notice everything that I like. I wrote about this the other day. I feel like everyone has different sensitivities to like the things that inspire them. And so like I'm constantly writing notes, taking pictures, and I'm sure a lot of people are. I don't think I'm unique in that way, but I think people have different levels of that. And if you can take that information and use it to create, like I'm creating a lot of stuff. And if I can use that information, that's definitely a skill. What was the question you asked me?
How do you improve the filter?
I don't know. You have to just, it's very hard to explain. So like, so intangible. You have to just like, you have to slow down your brain and think about, you have to like feel how thoughts feel and feel how you react to things and go through. I think going through your notes is good. It kind of shows you how I take notes, which is like, I've been recommending this to people because apparently it's like helpful. Is I just have a note for every month and I write down everything I think of and everything I have to do. It's one Apple note. So like this month is called like Daily April. And it's April, right? Yeah. And that's how I do it. And I go sometimes for my newsletter, I'll go through my notes and I'll see, oh, this idea really hit me. This idea really hit me. Yeah, it's very hard thing to teach.
Speaking about ideas that hit you, Air and Tetris are two movies that made you cry.
Yeah.
Why?
I cried so hard. Why? Not that hard, but so these movies just came out. Danny didn't know of them, which is good. But Tetris and this movie Air, and I cried in both of them. I never cry. I cried like lightly, but I cried at the same, they're the same movie, basically. The same movie. I'm not giving away anything. This isn't a trailer. Air, Tetris is about like the legal battle because Tetris was developed in Russia and this American went over to get the rights. So the whole thing happens in like courtroom, not courtrooms, but like offices. And similar thing with Air, this movie, it's about Nike fighting to get Michael Jordan's contract, right? To sign Michael Jordan. Same kind of movie, right? Very similar. Fighting for rights and taking place in offices. And there's moments in both of them. I don't know if this is a spoiler or not.
Spoil it.
I don't think it's a spoiler. I think they show them in trailers. But you, this is like history, so it's not giving anything away. But there's a moment in Tetris where they show the Game Boy. And there's a moment in Air where they show the Air Jordan for the first time. And these moments, I cried a little bit in both of them. And I'm not even lying, and I wasn't trying to cry. But it was just so amazing, these moments when they reveal this thing that no one had seen. This was like, I don't know if it was the same writer. The scenes were so similar. But it was like a tiny peep, like three people in a lab looking at this thing that billions of people were going to see, right? It's like someone made that. A small group of people made that thing. It's like, how do you come up with stuff like that? That's what I want to do. And that is like, that's why I cried a little. It's like the most amazing thing. And that's why I'm so obsessed with like Pixar. And it's just these magical, magical ideas.
You want to hear something crazy?
Sure.
You've already done it. You've created something that billions of people saw.
Not billions, but a lot of people, yeah.
Hundreds of millions.
The obsession has resonated with a lot of people. That is the thing I'm most proud of. It's what I want to talk about all day. Is like, I don't care about the followers. All I care about is opening up people to this idea of obsession. Not even them going down it, but just like a friend. It's like the word is like a friend that you can keep on your shoulder and like keeps you going, you know? And yeah, it's like, that's what I'm most proud of. If I can get that idea out to billions of people, that will be like a good life. And like, I think I can.
And I think you will too. And let these be the early days of the mission.
Yes, sir.
You know, I like to end these podcasts with challenges.
Yes.
I wonder what the challenges we have in the past. I did not go back and review them, but do you have a challenge that comes to mind from the 6 months of since we last spoke on the podcast or something else?
I would say, well, I'm working on a challenge, working on an actual challenge, like an official challenge that if I do it right, it will take over the world. So I will give a small challenge, a piece of the challenge. So the Marines, they have at the end of the Marine training, there's 12 weeks of training. And at the end, there's a thing that I forgot the name, but it is like an epic 24-hour like exercise where they're like, they're thrown out into the woods and they have to do all these different activities and they're starved and it's like brutal. It's like the end. It might be called the crucible. It's just, maybe it's not, but it's like this last pinnacle moment. Give yourself that right now. Set it for like a week from now or 2 weeks and give yourself a day where you're going to change the world. Give yourself a day to create something so insane and so epic. You're going to stay up late and you can create a lot in one day. That's what I'd say.
Put a day on a calendar.
Give yourself a day of obsession. That's what it is. Give yourself a day of pure obsession where you're not going to talk to anybody. You're not going to answer your phone. You're just going to obsess over this one thing. And there's going to be some tangible thing you create at the outset. That'd be my challenge.
When was the last time you did this?
Yesterday.
And what was that like?
Can't talk about it though.
You can't talk about it.
No.
Wow. Love it. Okay. Well, we'll end on that note. Zach, thank you so much for coming. That's Zach Pograb on Twitter. At Behavior Hack on Instagram and TikTok. And
Zach.blog, Zach.blog to subscribe to my newsletter and other stuff will be on there. And yeah.
Follow Obsession.
Follow Obsession.
Peace.